It has worked. I have used my great wizardly powers to channel the mystical waves of the podcast feed. Greetings, fair listeners. All hail King Arnold of Northeastia. Speaking of which, you may be wondering why there is no new episode of Hello from the Magic Tavern this week. It turns out new kings have to go to king school, so Arnie is going to be very busy for the next few months, ruling and learning at the same time. We will be back in a few months, but until then, I, Usador the Blue, shall be here using my powers to release episodes from behind the paywall, including the full second season of Offices and Bosses beginning next week, plus plenty of other fun episodes. If that, however, is not enough to sate your cavernous, perverse desire for Hello from the Magic Tavern content, we will continue to release new bonus episodes on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/magictavern, become a patron, and beginning in June, enjoy a brand new season of Offices and Bosses. That's right, Season 2 of O&B for free on the main feed, and Offices and Bosses Season 5, and all past seasons, on Patreon. But for today, let's listen to something called, Behind the Tavern. What the hell is that?
Welcome to what is intended to be the final episode of the season two Behind the Tavern. The finally finished wrapping up talking about season two of a podcast that is already in season five. But true to form, before we really start talking about those last couple episodes of season two, I would like to point out that as we were beginning to roll up, is this how we started last episode? I got confused about the terminology. As we were getting ready to record, Matt dropped into the chat a Masters of the Universe thing he really wants to buy.
I shouldn't buy it.
Oh, I didn't see this.
I don't think I'll buy it. I can't buy it. It's stupid.
It's a giant.
Whoa.
It costs $800. First of all, that's
$800.
Insane. Well, you get a giant horse with wings and a She-Ra.
Can you fuck her?
No.
What did you think I said?
It's 1/6 scale, which is She-Ra's going to be like
unfuckable. First,
unfuckable. 12 inches, and then a horse big enough to hold a 12-inch figure with wings. Look at the wingspan of that horse. Click on the image with the wingspan of the horse. It's 54-inch wingspan.
Jesus Christ!
It's gorgeous, though. It's a beautiful thing.
Cool looking.
That is incredible.
It's a Mondo collectible. I would love to own this. I haven't bought any of their Masters of the Universe Mondo stuff because it's too expensive.
I feel like I was just served up a TikTok in the last day or two where someone was talking about how there was going to be not Castle Grayskull, whatever Skeletor's place was called. Snake Mountain? Or they were about to make a giant set for that, and they decided to cancel it because they didn't think enough people were going to buy it.
It's actually, they made a Castle Grayskull. This is for Origins, which is like a smaller scale. They made a Castle Grayskull, they made a Snake Mountain, and then they made a Snake Layer, mm-hmm. which is something they were supposed to make in the 80s that they never made. And then they did like a crowdfund thing to like make it. And everyone was like, backed this crowdfund. I don't collect that line, so I didn't get it. They backed this crowdfund. Then they released a prototype of it, which was totally mm-hmm. different than the image they showed on the crowdfund. And everybody was like, that's not what I fucking asked for. It was like the thing they made, the prototype was actually way cooler. And then they're like, no, make the thing we wanted from the 80s. So they went back and they made it kind of like more like the original 80s design, which was kind of not as good, in my opinion.
I see.
Now, Matt, there's a lot of images in the gallery, a lot of images of She-Ra and the horse.
Yeah.
But then there's a
Swiftwind.
After like 80 pictures, there's like a little brown, it's like a donkey or something.
Yeah. Like
no, I guess it has a horn.
He's a unicorn. Yeah,
and then there's Pegasus. Like a gremlin wearing like rainbow galoshes.
That's Licky.
Oh.
And he looks insane.
There's
like two different owls. Maybe it's the same owl and like different, they have different attitudes or something.
The nice one is Cowl. These are both characters from like the cartoon. Like Licky was like literally a character you looked for, like Where's Waldo in an episode of She-Ra. Mm. And then the evil owl guy, I don't remember who that is.
It's like a cross between an owl and a butterfly.
Yeah, exactly. And then the little brown horse, I don't remember who that is. I'm sure it's from some specific episode that I don't recall.
And do they come with, for $800, do they come in that set? Or this is
yeah.
just...
Yeah, oh yeah, it's okay. the whole thing. It's like the deluxe double edition. You get the whole horse.
A deluxe double edition?
Well, you can... because, like, you can buy She-Ra separately. You can buy the horse separately. And that costs, like, $850. So if you buy them both, you save $50, guys. And you can convert the horse to look just like its secret form, Spirit. It's just like a horse with, like, an orange mane. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see, like, there's a picture where he's not a winged horse. He's just a regular white horse.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah?
Do you mind just plugging yours for a second?
Hey, sure, Arnie. No problem.
Yeah?
Here's what we do. These are limited time only, okay? I think we buy one. We wait 5 years. Matt's going to be so frustrated he missed out on it. It's going to sell out. Then we sell it to him for double the price. Arnie, yin yang.
Oh, shit.
Arnie, yin yang.
We're talking about $800. He also seemed to be, he started quoting higher numbers after that. Like this isn't even the whole thing, it sounds like. Like there's more of this that he wants.
Or Arnie, we buy it and we play with it. And we try and get Matt's head and be like, what does he see in this? What does he recognize we don't?
Do you think he will see us and just note from the way we're happy that we have it? He'll be like, holy shit.
100%.
You bastards. You have the Swiftwind, don't you? Matt, you're happy in only the way that a Swiftwind owner would be.
Yeah, what's going on?
So, we just had to talk about...
Nothing, Matt.
I'm not going to buy it.
Okay, so remember Hello from the Magic Tavern Season 2?
I hate talking about that. Let's talk about things I want to buy.
So we did season two and we've talked a little bit about how the idea for season two was we're in prison. We meant to leave Hogsface and we didn't, we got imprisoned by the Dark Lord and we were in prison. And I remember when we started the season thinking it was going to be like this fun Hogan's Heroes thing, which is a real hip reference, for the youngsters. Like we were going to be up to so many hijinks in the prison. Almost immediately, it felt like that just wasn't working. So by like episode 30 something, we just sort of changed it all up with Dark Lord's birthday party and kind of made it that I guess we were running the prison. Like we were in the prison and running the prison. We did all kinds of stuff throughout season two. But as we got to the end, I think we still wanted to pay off the idea of escaping the prison, essentially. And I know that like the joke about Hello from the Magic Tavern is that there is no plot. And then we do a lot of plot in the last two episodes, but I feel like season two is different because we do a lot of plot in the last five episodes.
That's a lot of plot.
We actually do like a couple different climaxes in a row.
Nice.
It's a multi-climaxing season.
The Dark Lord's birthday party. That was when we snagged Gilbert Gottfried, right? As Cockroach Clown?
That was when we had, yes, someone asked Gilbert Gottfried to record a bunch of stuff for us, and he did an amazing job. Totally committing to the crazy nonsense that I believe you wrote for him, correct?
Yeah, I wrote a bunch of sort of maybe one-liners or non-sequiturs, but I feel like that's still a cameo where I'm like, oh yeah, that's crazy. Like, as a kid, I used to adore Iago himself.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, I remember him as the host of Up All Night.
Yeah, me too. Google's Up All Night. You may suffer from insomnia. Okay, that seems fair.
I just feel like he was always a fixture. I can't even think of a specific thing. I mean, yeah, Iago and like, but yeah, stand-up, like just stand-up guy, yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day, which is when I was a kid, I feel like there's more of these people. Gilbert Gottfried, Little Richard, and Richard Simmons were just like, it'd just be like, oh, those are the people you see on Carson, or you just see them on TV. Like, I don't know what they do, but they're on TV all the time. And then as I got older, I'm like, oh, these are all people who served some purpose or did something big to become famous, and then they sort of cashed in on that. They sort of dined out on their celebrity for the last sort of 40 years of their life.
Yeah, they're weird personalities, essentially. Yes.
Yeah. But I'd like to do that where it's just like, I get to a point where it's just like, I'm just going to dine out on what I did 20 years ago and just kind of bounce around? I don't know.
I mean, basically being a person that is just a talk show guest and doesn't actually do anything else, it yeah. sounds perfect to me. And yeah. I guess makes sense considering that I do a podcast. That I think that sounds fun.
I don't think that that's a thing anymore, though, is it? Like, is there anybody who's just doing talk shows? And like, I mean, talk shows are not in great shape anyway. Like,
yeah. I mean, I could be wrong. I feel like there's a little bit of an analogous of that in like England, where you just kind of like do panel shows all the time.
But oh, yeah. And I love an English panel show. Yeah, absolutely.
That would be the dream.
We got to get that going over here. We need some American panel shows, but I'm sure they would get bad immediately because they'll have like a poet on.
What's that?
P-O-E-T, poet.
Yeah, we're just...
We would never do that here. That's... No. That's
it. Just why do you hate fly. Poetry so much?
Oh, no, I don't hate poetry. It's not me.
We'd have Aaron Paul on or something. Or what? No, that Aaron Paul's no, Aaron Paul's from Breaking Bad. Who am I thinking of?
You're thinking Logan
Lloyd,
Paul.
Lloyd, yeah, yeah, or Jake Lloyd, or no, Jake Lloyd from Star Wars. Wait, who are the two brothers that are just like, I'll fight Mike Tyson? Who are those guys?
Now I really want to see Adel on a panel show where he's just stream of consciousness trying to think of
it's me talking to Jake Lloyd, and I'm like, so you fought Mike Tyson? And he's like, huh?
No, absolutely he's
like,
not.
I played Anakin and then got into some legal troubles, and I'm like, I don't know, man.
Okay, I do want to talk about one of my favorite interludes or sort of spinoff episodes we've ever done, which is near the end of season two, Hello from the Future, where we did a kind of like our space universe thing. And the idea was we didn't want to do Star Wars. We didn't want to do Star Trek. That stuff felt like it was really done a lot, but that it would be fun to do kind of like a, I don't even know what you would call it. I was going to say space opera, but that's what Star Wars is, like a sort of Flash Gordon-esque.
It's a pulpier space opera.
Yeah, just a kind of weirder thing like that. And I would play a kind of sort of borderline villain, or at least just very full of himself version of my character, who, you know, by some degree could be considered one of the villains of the series.
We all went to your place and watched Flash Gordon, right?
Yes, I was like, I was really keen on doing this episode, and I was like, guys, I can't really explain to you what this world would be. Let's just come over and let's watch Flash Gordon. And I, for me, it was a lot of fun. I don't know how if it was fun for you guys seeing that movie for the first time or not.
Here's what's troubling to me is that both feels like 6 months ago and also like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
In my head. I also, yeah, I had never seen the movie. I vaguely remember being really tickled. One, the score is amazing because it's Queen, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The score is amazing. And then I remember there being a guy I was fascinated with, which was the dude who was like, he almost sounded like the guy in Indiana Jones who's like, Indy, like the bad date, mm-hmm. like that guy who I guess also played Gimli maybe. But there's like the angel guy who like talks, over enunciates and talks really weird, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's sort of like a angel. He's sort of like a... Like a, I don't know.
The Hawkman. Something.
The Hawkman.
He's a Hawkman, yeah. But he's almost a, sort of like a Viking. He's like a weird Viking Hulk Hawkman.
But the way he, like his cadence and his, like, the way he would sort of just like put the mustard on the ball when he spoke was just so fascinating. Really enjoyed that guy.
Yeah, that's Brian Blessed. He's a big.
What else has he been in?
Well,
Brian Blessed? It sounds like a mega church pastor.
Oh, he's like a big Shakespearean actor.
That makes total sense.
But the thing that you definitely know him from, Adel, is Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace.
That's Jake Lloyd. You're thinking of Jake Lloyd.
No, he plays Boss Nass. He plays like the Gungan guy who's like the leader of the Gungans that they go to.
Boss Nass, who's always after those two good old Southern boys,
those Duke boys,
exactly. Yes, basically.
Oh, he's the guy who does the.
Yeah, that's the same guy.
That's wild.
Yeah, same guy.
Thank you, Matt. That's a cool little tidbit.
You're welcome.
We watched Flash Gordon, and Adel, you decided to be a like I think it was is it Chant the Space Angel?
Sounds right.
And Matt, you decided that Usador would be a mad scientist.
There was never any question about this. I didn't decide. It was in the stars. No, there's the doctor who like is in the rocket with Flash and Dale Arden. I forget his name, but it is like, it does begin with a Z. So I was like, oh, I'll be Ulrich. I'm Zador, Dr. Zador. Mm. So it's you, Zador. So it's like trying to be goofy with it and be like, oh, this is the alternate universe version of him. Whatever the doctor is in the original Flash Gordon, whose name escapes me at the moment. But I also loved that guy. Even as a kid watching that movie, I watched that movie a lot. There's the thing where they brainwash him. They like wipe his brain clean. And there's this very intense scene where this actor is like, he's like, I'm just trying to remember anything, a lyric from a Beatles song or something. He's just like, it's just such like a weird, like, I don't know. It was burned in my brain from being a kid that like that guy seemed very intense and interesting.
That's wild.
I think that Chant the Space Angel and Dr. Zador are maybe my favorite alternate world versions of your two characters because they're kind of the most different.
Yeah.
They're not really the same characters, but they're just a kind of like a different type of character in the sort of role that each of you play on the show.
That's I need to go back and listen to that episode. I feel like I haven't listened to it in forever. I did have a quick thought, Matt, while you were talking about the doctor and being with, because you, Arnie, you were like a high school quarterback or no, not high school.
I was a football player for the Cincinnati Bengals.
That's
I
right.
Think,
yes.
Which I think is weirdly like, isn't he might be a football player or something. Yeah. Flash Gordon. It's just kind of like a weird extension of Flash Gordon, but making it a weird Ohio thing. Like just this kind of smarmy guy who's a football player and slash space hero.
I want to, the thought I had as Matt was talking about this is I want to go ahead and on Matt's behalf, I want to beg Hollywood. If you do a Back to the Future remake, consider Matt Young for Doc Brown.
Oh my God. I'd be so great at that.
He would be so great at that. He would be fun. He'd have all sorts of physical sort of picadillos. I mean, just consider him is all I'm saying.
Watch this.
1.21 gigawatts.
And please, Hollywood, consider me for the part of the brother who slowly disappears in the picture.
In this reboot, Marty McFly's brother is 30 years older than him.
And consider either me or John Cena as Biff. Probably John Cena.
Oh, what if you trade off scene by scene?
That's interesting.
I'd like that. So part of the idea of Hello from the Future was we had this whole thing all season about the big villain being the Void, I think it was called, a sort of like a riff on the Neverending Story kind of thing that was devouring everything. But we knew we wanted to end the season by escaping the prison, and that was just a whole separate thing. So it seemed fun to have the space world characters, including Sniffin as a mysterious man, Kate James as Trisha, Ryan as Craig, and Sarah Maher as Sarah Maher, like have those characters sort of resolve that main villain thing in an alternate world thing. And that was sort of a fun idea. And we all got together in this big recording studio. Although I think it was, again, Tim and Kate were in New York recording remotely. The rest of us were in Chicago in this big recording studio. It's kind of a miracle that it all pieced together. And it was also one of these weird things where it's like, we've got to resolve this story, but also our three characters weren't really there to fix it. So it was just kind of like, Tim, Kate, and Sarah, you guys solved this problem for us, which I think they did a great job of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember having a blast during the recording. And I feel maybe the studio we're at, I feel like the feather in their cap was like, do you guys know Hey There, Delilah by Plain White Tees? And we're like, yeah. And they're like, guess where they recorded, and it was that studio. And maybe Siamese Dream, or I feel like there's also a Smashing Pumpkins album recorded there. But
yeah, I think there's right. Some legitimate things, some legitimately good stuff there.
Whoa, shots fired at Plain White Tees.
Yeah, take it.
So we did that kind of resolution. And then I believe in the same recording session right after that, because it was another thing with a lot of people, we did Chunt's Wedding, which was another big, like, could be a season finale, but was sort of like resolving some big storylines.
Who all was a guest for that one?
Oh, gosh.
Rathjen was there as the Baron. Who else? Let me quickly look it up.
I think some people recorded stuff and sent it in too.
Gotcha.
I think Flower? There were like some standing up and like, I'm going to say a thing.
Yes.
And it's one of the few episodes I wrote something for.
Oh yeah. You wrote the.
I wrote the vow, not vows, but like the ceremony.
Yeah.
Part that I did.
The officiant's speech. Yeah.
But then kind of had moments where I expected people to kind of interject or interrupt me, and we kind of played around that.
Sarah Logsdon was there as Tannikin the Pinglet, evil Tannikin. Who played your mom? I'm trying to remember.
Jill Fenstermaker, I believe.
Jill Fenstermaker was there. It says Cabalone Valentine was there, but I don't think, I think that must have been something recorded separately that we added in. The Transdimensional Delivery Man. Yeah, Brett Lyons.
Joey Romaine. Was Brett Lyons there?
I think Brett Lyons was there, it also might have been one of those things where we had people like record. Some people I know you had send voice notes in that we recorded in, that we put in. But also I think like we maybe recorded pieces when people were in the studio earlier for episodes that we would kind of sprinkle into the episode. But it was mostly you two and me and then Rathjen and Sarah Logsdon, right? As Tannikin, kind of doing most of the stuff.
So it was more of a patch job for sure than a lot of other stuff we've done. And not in a bad way. Like, just, you know, it made it easier to facilitate the whole thing that way.
Yeah. To replicate the sort of chaos of a wedding with all the people. Did we get married in the prison?
That's a good question. I think we were kind of like, I think the idea sort of became that all of Hog's Face was imprisoned, but that like we pretty quickly had let go of it. The idea of us being in prison cells. It was just that like the whole town was a prison.
Gotcha.
We're at the Minotaur. Cause I think it all tied into also, doesn't it tie into eventually the basement stuff?
Well, that's a couple episodes later.
Oh, okay.
But the big thing in this one is basically Chunt marrying Tussidor. So you had to, was it hard to play Chunt and Tussidor together in scenes as you remember it?
Arnie, it's interesting you asked this because just last night, literally last night, less than 24 hours ago, I watched the movie Sinners. I watched Michael B. Jordan's performance and I said, there but for the grace of God go I. Or there did I go for God, Jake Lloyd.
Grace.
But I felt like it was a one-to-one to Michael B. Jordan's performance in Sinners.
Fair. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Holy shit, that was a good movie.
That is a good movie.
Was such a good movie.
That was so good. Took some big swings and they paid off.
Oh, my God.
I honestly, if it was tough, I don't remember it. I'm going to go ahead and say it was tough because I am by no stretch of the imagination any amount of like vocal artist where I can like keep track of characters and be like, oh, I'll simply slip into this and then slip back to that. I feel like I always struggle to be like, what was I doing? Which voice was I using? So I'm going to go ahead and say it was probably a bit of a chore.
I thought you slipped in and out of it pretty well in the best possible way. You know, like it felt natural to like, you know, it's like you know Chunt, and then it's like you knew the affectation you gave yourself as Tussidor, and it just like, I don't know. It always felt seamless to me.
They had pretty different energies too. I think you did a good job of keeping them separate. Story-wise, I think, you know, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on it now. You know, there was this idea of it would be fun for Chunt to be in an ongoing relationship. It was kind of funny for us to have you kind of like playing both sides of that relationship. And then as like in the classic sort of like a sitcom where people have a love interest, what do you do with them kind of way? I know I'll take all, like I was very in my head of like, well, what do we do with Tussidor? Like it feels like we should drive it towards some kind of resolution or sort of a wedding. But then what is Chunt sort of like eternally married to Tussidor? And I will take, I don't know,
credit/blame?
Credit/blame for saying, I think we should have Chunt and Tussidor get married and then Tussidor die.
Which became a running theme of killing every character I ever introduced.
But wasn't it also related back to your Chunt's parents' wedding?
Yes. Because my dad died on the dance floor. Because didn't we say, like, during a wedding, you have to, was it like you have to consummate the marriage on the dance floor or something? Yeah.
Yes. You and had to play like, a sex scene with yourself.
I mean, finally.
Insert audio here, probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at him go.
Yeah.
Isidore, have you ever watched one of these before?
Oh, hundreds, yes.
Oh, yes. Are those bees getting bigger?
Oh. I think they are, yeah.
And sinners, if you're listening, release that scene. I know you filmed it. I know you filmed it.
Can I ask an embarrassing question that I think I know the answer to, but I don't remember for sure?
Okay.
What was Tussidor? Was Tussidor a part of Usidor? That
I feel like he was like a like runoff. Like I feel like he was like. So you have the Ninja Turtles, right? And then you have like whatever Bebop and Rocksteady are.
Okay.
Which I guess is still mutants. Bad example. Oh, okay. Here we go. You know how you have Mogwai, or no? What's his name? Gizmo.
Gizmo.
He's a Mogwai. Who is a Mogwai?
But then you have those gross ones.
Yeah.
Al, could you put this in horse from She-Ra terms so we could best understand it?
Oh, yeah, that'd help.
So, you know, excuse me, I have something in my throat I have to clear. You know how you have Swiftwind?
Uh-huh. And then when Swiftwind gets wet, more Swiftwinds pop out of his back.
Yes.
Then if you feed those Swiftwinds after midnight, they turn into unicorn gremlins. Yeah, yes. Okay.
That's what it is.
Got it.
Could you put what Usidor is to Tussidor or vice versa in Frasier terms?
Let's see. Usidor is to Tussidor as season one Frasier is to season one Niles, where they're just trying to recapture some element of early Kelsey grammar.
Outstanding.
I still think it made sense. It seemed like a thing that like a serialized TV show would do, maybe that we grew up with which is sort of like on the wedding, Tussidor dies. So sort of made sense to me, although I totally get and I take the blame. There's some people were sort of like, you know, it's a little bit too much of a trope of, you know, gay love interest gets killed. And I hate the idea of us playing into that. And that's my fault. What was your honest when I pitched the idea to you, Adel, of like, let's kill Tussidor? Was it annoying to you at all?
No, I think it was a thing of like, I think any time, even to this day, I feel like whenever any of us introduce a character, there's no part of me that's like, this character simply must populate this world for the next X amount. I feel like it's just like, oh, we did this dumb thing and like we followed it for a little bit and then it's come to its run its course sort of thing. So I think if anything, I was like, oh, that's like totally cool and like that's a plot point. That's some sort of apex of like an emotional crescendo for Chunt. And then let's move on to a next thing kind of thing. So there's no part of me. It was like, I really want to keep Tussidor around so I can really channel this and that. I think I was just like, that's totally fair and fine. So, and I think because, we need those episodes or those characters to sometimes take the fall to like have any sort of, you know, movement or sort of emotional heightening. I think I was very happy to sort of fall on the sword or explode on the sexual dance floor, as it were.
Explode on the sexual dance floor. That's your disco hit, right?
Well, Tom Jones co-wrote it, but I do get residuals.
Am I remembering correctly? The other idea that we bandied about was maybe Tussidor turns out to be evil instead.
Oh, maybe.
But I don't really know that we particularly went down that road very far.
Matt, to go back to your question earlier, I feel like I don't know what I said at the time or what we discovered, but I feel like to me, Tussidor is probably what happens when like Usidor accidentally cuts his hand and like some of it drips on like a mushroom or something.
Yeah, that tracks.
And like maybe a shooting star crosses over that patch of grass or something. I feel like that combination leads to some weird concoction that is Tussidor.
I think we even addressed it at some point that it was like, like I just can't remember specifically what it was. I'm sure somebody knows, or it's easy to go back and find that. But yeah, you're right. It's 100% like something of him, but then kind of morphed into something else, something new.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that was the second sort of big resolution. And then we kind of did the two part, like resolving the prison thing. I think the idea sort of that came about pretty early in season two was like, when we get to the end of the season, let's not just escape. Let's have to blow up Hog's Face. Like that felt like it would be a fun sort of send off. Let's save slash blow up the place. And also like sort of sending us off on hypothetically a season where we finally travel around, which is something people had been wanting for a few years.
Yeah. And I think that that was really exciting to be like, oh, we're going to be on the road for like a whole season. Like to me, that was like super exciting. So I was happy to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it definitely helped us feel like, I don't ever feel like we were in a rut exactly, but it was like, we should move around. We should like have other kinds of stories and be able to do different types of things, which at first just didn't feel possible. Like it felt really hard to even like approach that idea. And then like, it just got easier because I think we had more support, honestly, from editing staff.
And, yeah, I think everyone. We had gained enough confidence by that point that like our editors could make different ambiances for the background, like that it would be doable and wouldn't be like a total disaster to kind of like mix things up.
We're able to do an outdoor fireplace.
Finally. Yeah. Benches outside instead of tables.
Just kidding. Our editors are incredible.
And I feel like I had it in my head that there wanted to be some kind of like, well, I think I had two things in my head. One, that since Mittens was such a big part of our show, that it should be like the movie, I think it's called Victory, which I've actually never seen. Isn't there's like some World War II soccer movie starring Sylvester Stallone where they are in like a war prison or something, and they and it's like Pele and Sylvester Stallone, and they're on the prison soccer team.
Finally.
And they escape at the end by like losing the game, but escaping the whole prison. And sort of, I had the thought that like, one, we should do something like that with Mittens, which would be fun. But then also wanting there to be like, it still felt like there needed to be one more reversal. Like us just escaping didn't feel as fun. But before we get to the second reversal, I thought that Mittens episode was really fun. Like it's something that people had wanted for a long time. And it was fun to have Rush come in and essentially run that episode, like essentially just do a play by play of that Mittens game.
So good.
It's very good. That's one where I felt like I was on my heels a little bit though, like where I was like, am I helping? Is this the thing that needs to happen now? Like, you know, not in a bad way. Saying like Rush was great, obviously, and like had it well in hand. But it was like I probably felt the most it's one of the more tenuous at ones for me personally, where I was like, is this good?
It is another one where we're essentially handing over the center of the episode to someone else. And it's a relief when that goes well, but it's also like a little nervous making, even though Rush was very good. He didn't play Larry Birdman, or if he was Larry Birdman, he was very briefly. He played like a new announcer called Rick Picklesmith or something like that.
Yeah, Rick Picklesmith. And it's more like I want to support that idea. And I'm like, oh, is this supporting? I want to set up this person for success when we're handing over the reins. And like, am I doing enough? Am I doing too much? Like, I don't want to be in the way either, you know? It's like, I think it's that sort of thing you're trying to navigate.
I think that one was also hard to do for us, maybe because it's kind of always hard to do an episode that has multiple locations at the same time. So it's like, there was some amount of like in the booth, but also doing things on the field. And it always feels a little tough to make sure that that's all going to piece together in the edit. I know I get in my head about things like that when we're performing.
Sure.
Well, I mean, it's the very reason we have some in quote unquote normal episodes, like meet me under the table. Let's go talk about this thing. It's like it's really hard in this medium and this format to be to just have like a hard cut between what's going on in the booth. Now it's like immediately you're in the field and you're just dealing with that. It's like you need somebody to kind of call it out, and maybe that gets trimmed out later or something, or we just like stop and say like, let's go over here now and talk about it. Like sometimes that helps to just kind of direct it a little bit. And I can't remember how much I think we did that a little bit in that episode of like, hey, let's try to get a thing where everyone is here or doing something. And with those big episodes, it's just, and it's not like we're not improvising. We're just like, we're stopping and saying like, let's do a scene here. And then we improvise that scene.
And I think this was another one, and the wedding was maybe sort of similar to like the end of season one. I think we usually, for practicality reasons, we sort of have to record out of order. Like I think there were probably parts of it that we recorded at different times. And that's always also a little more stressful to kind of like mentally track like what's going on. Like, oh, we're doing the ending part now, but we're not doing the stuff that's leading up to it yet or something like that.
Yeah.
Who besides Rush, who else was on that episode?
Let me see. I'm pretty sure Paul Grandi as the Ooze was like on the Mittens team, maybe.
Perfect.
Let's see here. Flower, it says here. I think we had gotten audio from Matt Gourley and Mark McConville as Axelrod Remax, Chamblin Bunny Cuddle. They were doing their own kind of Pistol Shrimps radio-esque commentating awesome. Like that we sort Forgot of walked by.
That's fantastic.
And it says here also that Daphne, the unwed mother, was also in that episode.
Mm. And Squibbert. So that was both. That was Sarah.
Yeah. Sarah Shockey. Yeah, that was probably also like, if I had to guess, was like a pre-recorded thing that we sort of
gotcha.
Placed into it.
At some point, this might have been more recently, did we make, was it a thing of like, we made it where Chunt is maybe like some star Mittens player?
Yes.
Who like keeps running back and forth from a game to.
Yeah.
I think.
Was that a thing?
Yes. I can't remember if that was as long ago as last season, as in season 4, but we've mentioned it a couple times in season 5.
I feel like it was like 15 episodes ago.
I think it was like over a year ago.
Really?
But we have referenced it a few times since, which was the idea. I think it was when we were in Nibblebottom that there was, I think it's a really fun runner that we probably should make a point of remembering, that Chunt almost certainly has a double life as a Mittens player that has a very similar name to him, like Chunk Buggles Butt or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I should write this down.
Yeah. We'll put it in the comments. Let us know exactly what the name of that player was, because we should definitely revisit that. So this episode doesn't go on too long. Why don't we hop to the final episode, which I actually thought was a delight to record. Like, these are all fun to record, but the other ones we've talked about were a little more like plot dependent of like, we kind of had to make these complicated things happen, which is usually something I subject you guys to and is kind of usually not as much fun. Like, 'cause we feel a little bit constrained. For this one though, it felt a little more freeing because we knew simply that the twist was at the end. We were Carfoons. We were, you know, painted versions of ourselves. And all we had to do was say, because I think it was Maluski as Claudia, Dripfang and Baron Rangoon were just going to kind of like gloat about how they defeated us for more than half an episode, and we would cower in fear. And that was a fun thing to do. And then just know 60% of the way through the episode, we were going to reveal that it was all a con and that we had escaped and we were Carfoons. And then that was really fun to play. Just the kind of like, oh, hey, by the way, we've been scared this whole time, but we're not. And then that kind of reversal was so fun. And it's also, we don't do it enough. I just always like us improvising when shit is blowing up. That's actually one of my favorite things for us to do. Like the end of season one, where we're running around while we're being attacked. And in this one, we're like literally the whole town is blowing up and we're kind of dying. I think that is really fun, where we do a bunch of like weird little scenes within the chaos.
Yeah, that is fun. Remind me, I think I know again, but did we swap out the Carfoons during the game? Was that the trick?
Yes. And I think that's the thing that made one of the things that made recording the Mittens game a little bit hard was sort of like, we have to do a thing where we try to do what they do in Victory, where we escape during halftime, but we have to like obscure it enough that we get caught. But there's like a brief period of time where you don't track what we're doing, so that we're sort of swapped out. And again, this is me overcomplicating things to make it so that, that we had a week to get out, essentially. Right. And that the Carfoons could survive a week. There's way too many like weird exact periods of time where it's like Carfoons can live a week and all of that stuff that we always eventually break. If we ever have a rule that something lasts exactly a week, you always know it's gonna be to be in between two episodes.
Well, Carfoon Arnie definitely still exists, right?
Carfoon Arnie still exists. Carfoon Blemish still exists. And I will say that that's intentional. Like, and there's some stuff in the sort of Carfoon lore that we talk about that's sort of planted in there about how that's possible and what that might mean.
Interesting.
I will say, when we finish season two, like partly me, partly you guys, I feel like we intentionally planted some stuff that I feel like were really big lore things. That I was like, I hope we're not being too obvious with this, but I think maybe we were too subtle about it, because I've seen some people pick up on it and sort of understand it. But like, I think there are some pretty big things that were essentially quasi-defined at the end of that season. I know I walked away from that season being like, whew, a lot of loopholes have been closed.
Yeah.
Time to end the podcast.
Wait, did we say Kevin was there too? Drip Fang?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I did quickly pull up the wiki because I was curious how Usador, don't I say one of my magic name, my secret names to destroy the town?
I believe, yeah, you have a magic name. You had a magic name that you had mentioned could destroy a city.
Right.
And I don't remember at some point in earlier in the season you mentioned that. I feel like we tried to kind of like collect details like that that could be paid off at the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I say a lot of dumb shit and then hopefully someone pays attention.
We do a little bit less of that now, where it's just sort of like, how many things we've collected over the season can we pay off at the end? Because it's kind of, because again, the seasons are so fucking long. Like, who's going to remember that in episode 37, we referenced this thing that then comes back, you know, at the end of the season.
You said you did want to wrap a bow on Butt Soup?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Chunce Laser?
Yes, yes. Chunce Laser, which he got rid of almost immediately. I literally have a post-it note on my computer right now that says laser gun to remind myself that I now have a laser gun. We've actually recorded a couple of...
Wait, how did you get one?
In the Mysterious Man episode in this our current season, season 5. I get a laser gun. And when that came up in the episode, I'm like, I'm going to fucking hold on to this laser gun. We are going to keep this laser gun for a while. I haven't done anything with it. I probably never will, but I'm just at least going to remember I have a laser gun for a little while.
And of course, in Foon, laser, loose anus. So everybody relax.
Gun.
Well, don't relax too much.
You gotta use it. It's Chekhov's laser.
You gotta use Chekhov's laser.
Gotta use it.
Arnie, remember in Cherry Orchard when that laser gets fired? Just like fucks up the orchard? You know, Chekhov.
Oh.
Cherry Orchard.
Sure.
Hannah and her sisters, remember all those lasers?
Oh, sure. So many lasers. Well, it's because they're all reflecting off of the glass menagerie.
Yes. Tennessee Williams also huge on lasers.
Oh, that's right. But they also wrote Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, that was Chekhov.
Well, that's season two. We finally, after a long time, have wrapped up this season. Anything else? Any other thoughts about this season?
This was not the last season with Earwolf.
No, although I guess it is worth mentioning, like for the whole second half, almost a full year, we were trying to figure out our contract was coming up, and we were sort of like wanting to do Patreon, trying to figure it out. It wasn't like some of it's just slow because, you know, our lawyers, everything was sort of slow. And also we were too busy to sort of push it along. We did have a strong desire to do a Patreon. And in retrospect, I really wish we had do a Patreon at the end of season two,
instead of like
2 years later. But we ultimately decided to do another 2-year contract with Earwolf. And there were many reasons why that was a good decision, but then also ultimately it would have been nice if we'd gone independent earlier. But when we do someday talk about season three, which I actually think would be really fun to talk about behind the tavern, because part of that was we almost immediately went to LA and recorded a dizzying number of episodes. We did a week where we did something. 12 episodes in that, 4 days or something. Wild. With some of our favorite people in those episodes.
Did season three start with Justin McElroy as the statue?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That was the first episode?
That was the first episode. Okay. So let us know in the comments, do you want to, we'll get around to doing season three sometime, but you know, the more enthusiastic you are about hearing more, the sooner we'll get around to talking about season three. And when we do season three, my big question is, these don't have to just be episodes where we talk about this happened in this episode. It is fun to do interviews with the actors who play these characters. Are there people you especially want us to do an interview episode with? They're not especially season three centric, but ones that come to mind are, we should interview Martin Wilson.
I'm out.
Just think how mad it'll make Tim Sniffen if we
interview
Martin, the voice of Blemish.
Hell yes.
I'm in.
Partly because Martin could not be any more different than Blemish. There's just something so funny about the character of Blemish comes out of Martin Wilson.
I love Martin.
Yeah. Mild-mannered reporter for the Daily Planet, Martin Wilson.
Guys, I just saw something. I think it's actually big breaking news.
Uh-huh. Oh, shit.
On this Mondo Shop thing, at the very bottom, Matt, you may have read this, and I was looking through the gallery and didn't pay attention. It says, P.S. Watch out, ... We've hidden bonus low-key, LOO-KEE. We've hidden bonus low-key clear rainbow variants in select bundles. You never know where you might find one.
There might be one in your house right now, Matt.
Holy shit. I gotta tear this place up.
And it's a clear variant, so you won't be able... It'll be like baby scorpions where you won't be able to see them.
Nice. Yeah. Wait, no, that's terrible.
Ugh, Matt loves baby scorpions.
That's your high school nickname, right?
Everyone in the comments, let me know. Is that if I did buy this thing... Is there any chance I would want to then start buying the rest of the things in the series? Probably not.
Matt, that's the main reason to not buy it. You keep saying I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
What is the percentage chance that you might, right? Like it's a non-zero chance, right? It might be very low.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight, zero.
While you think about that, Matt.
I've spent as much money on stupider things, not often, but every once in a while, something becomes important to you.
Matt, while you ponder that, I will say, if you do buy it, which I actually hope you do because you deserve to treat yourself, I would say you must bring it on tour. And we
it's
can like
so fucking
we
big.
Can, we can hide it somewhere on stage, or maybe we can during the meet and greet, you can get a picture with it. I don't know. Think it over.
Could we do a show that's just that on stage and we never come out, but people are like, shit, that's the thing Matt bought.
It's pretty impressive. I don't think I'm buying it. I mean, there's a 20% chance I'll buy it.
Okay, 20% though. That's
because if I buy it, I will. I even though I say I just want this one. I don't need the other characters. I'll start being like, well, but if I just bought this one, and then I'll buy another one, then I'll buy a third one, then I'll be like, well, now I got to get them all.
Straw dot 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 camel's back dot,
too,
dot dot.
Too expensive to get the whole fucking set. Can't do it.
And you do not have any room.
No, like
you are actively trying to make space.
I literally filled a storage unit with Gundam models, Transformers, the other Masters of the Universe collection I already have, some DC stuff, Legos, like all that shit. And now once I move to a new apartment, I'm going to start clearing all that stuff out. And I'm going to start selling some of it off. So go to my, I'll have an eBay page directly linked to all of the future
Patreon newsletters. Auctions.
Yeah, we'll sell them on the road.
I mean, I think it sounds like a good idea. Like when you do these, like you should make your eBay auctions available to our patrons, like in case they're interested in the same bullshit that you are.
Can you imagine Usador being like, 200, I hear 200, do I hear 3? Like, it would be so funny to hear you not do the the Porky Pig. I think the big thing I learned today is that 1/6 scale is unfuckable.
It's only 12 inches.
Unfuckable.
Only 12 inches?
Yeah, it's one of the most confusing things in toy collecting is that 1/12 scale is 6-inch figures and 1/6 scale is 12-inch figures.
That's wild. None of that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well, think about it.
Matt, would you consider just going into your storage closet or into your storage facility full of toys?
Yeah.
We bring a video camera and you just explain what you just show everything and talk about it. And then we make that something we put up on the Patreon.
I don't know,
that would be so fucking fun and so stressful for Matt.
And we can make fun of you.
Yeah, of course you make fun of me. I get that. I understand the premise of this episode. It's possible, but it's like boxed up pretty well. So it could get a little wonky.
But at some point you're going to have to go through those boxes to put those things on eBay.
Yeah. Slowly. I'm going to take things out and I'm going to like deal with them box at a time. The problem was it was all here in a big fucking pile. Now it's in like small containers. I could take a container and deal with it. This is a terrible end to this episode. It's gone on for far too long talking about this.
Well, Matt, would you mind being Usador as a auctioneer and Arnie and I will bid on stuff?
Do I hear 200? 200, 200, 200, do I hear 250, 250, 200, I give 250, do I hear 255, do I have 250, 260, 265, 267, 268, 269.
Wait, I would like the listener to know, first of all, Adel and I are quietly raising our hands at times to bid, something that is not conducive to podcasting at all, but also Usador is just doing numbers regardless of how much we're putting our hands up.
I love increments of 50 and then increments of $1. Do I hear 250? Do I hear 300? Do I hear 231?
Look, I know where it's going to max out. It's fine.
Okay. All right, guys. This was fun. We learned so much.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Up next, season 3. Well, I hope you all heard an episode. I just heard white noise that whole time. But I am sensing another element of the feed coming through. Oh, let me decipher it with my most arcane magics. Oh. This episode was produced by Arnie Niekamp, Matt Young, and Adel Rifai. Associate producer Anna Hoverman. Post-production coordination by Garrett Schultz. This episode edited by Tim Joyce. Magic Tavern logo by Alan Laban and theme music by Andy Poland. Oh, that took a bit out of me. I'm sure we'll have it worked out by next week. In time for Offices and Bosses Season 2 coming to the main feed. And don't forget, join Patreon to get new episodes during this break between seasons. As a patron, you always receive 2 new bonus episodes each month. A monthly newsletter, the full back catalog of over 100 bonus episodes, and an ad-free version of the main feed. Plus additional benefits like access to the Magic Tavern Discord, including quarterly meet and greet, and early access to live events. That's patreon.com/magictavern. And don't forget,
You can also get all of your favorite Magic Tavern merch by going to hellofromthemagictavern.dashery.com, including our brand new shirt with the name of the show and charming images of myself, Arnie, and Chunt. Until next week, fair listeners.